NBC Monitor News on the hour, and here with the news, Jeffrey Pond. Governor Bob Scott of North Carolina today ordered National Guardsmen into the city of Henderson, where racial trouble led to sporadic sniping and arson last night. An undetermined number of troops are due to enter the city this afternoon. The trouble began late Friday when Henderson police used tear gas to disperse black demonstrators at school headquarters. Later, shots were fired at police and firemen while several buildings burned down in a black neighborhood. Young blacks gathered in the ruins of a gutted tobacco warehouse and began throwing things at passing cars. The call for the National Guard followed. The troops will be used to enforce a 6 p.m. curfew. Two explosions, apparently caused by terrorist hand grenades, caused heavy casualties today in a movie house in Phnom Penh, the capital of Cambodia. The grenades reportedly killed at least 14 people and wounded 18. Several of the victims were children. It was one of the few acts of terrorism in Phnom Penh since the Cambodian War began last March. The number of South Vietnamese troops taking part in their country's newest drive into Cambodia is far smaller than first reported, according to South Vietnamese officials. Some 2,500 of Saigon's forces are said to be involved, instead of 7,000, as initially claimed by military sources in Phnom Penh. The South Vietnamese are trying to link up with the Cambodian task force for a joint campaign against Vietnamese communist forces south of Phnom Penh. A top South Vietnamese general today said his country's troops may penetrate as deep as 50 miles into Cambodia. He also said he thinks all American combat units can be withdrawn from the southern half of South Vietnam sometime next year. An American Army captain has been found murdered in his quarters in Da Nang, South Vietnam. He'd been stabbed, probably with a bayonet. His name has not been disclosed. A fire has heavily damaged an Ohio National Guard armory in Alliance, 50 miles east of Cleveland. Authorities are still investigating to find out how it began. Firemen encountered an unusual problem. Details from Douglas Drake in Cleveland.
The firemen were hampered in battling the blaze by new security measures taken by the guard. Following burglaries of several armories, the Ohio National Guard commander ordered security beefed up. Alliance Assistant Fire Chief L.S. Allison says when his men arrived at the building, they had to fight the blaze from outside the armory.
They have all steel doors on the place, all the windows have got steel bars, and all their glass is small panes with wire mesh in the glass.
Allison said a National Guard officer finally showed up with some keys. The firemen got inside, but not before $500,000 worth of damage was done to the building and the Army equipment stored there. Allison said there's no question the fire would have done much less damage had the firemen been able to enter the building immediately. Douglas Drake, NBC News, Cleveland.
Israeli Defense Minister Moshe Dayan today said the UN peace talks and the mediator Gunnar Yaring are the only way to achieve peace in the Middle East. Therefore, said Dayan, he favors resumption of the talks, but he did not say when, nor did he say they should be resumed if the Egyptians do not remove the Soviet anti-aircraft missiles they've placed in the Suez Sea Spire Zone. For those reasons, Dayan's statement is not regarded on its face as marking a change in Israeli policy. Premier Meir has said Israel won't go back to the peace table while the missiles remain. In Amman, the new premier of Jordan, Wasfi Tell, said today that his primary goal is to encourage brotherhood between the Jordanian army and the Palestinian guerrillas. In the wake of their bloody fighting in September, Tell, whom the guerrillas consider hostile, promised to turn Jordan into what he called the launching pad and mainstay of the guerrilla movement. Bullets today wounded one of two Russian sentries guarding the huge Soviet war memorial in the British zone of West Berlin. The Russian was hit twice. A British ambulance rushed into a Soviet military hospital in East Berlin, where he's in serious condition. West Berlin authorities have launched what is believed to be the largest manhunt in that city in the post-war years. From slogans and leaflets discovered afterward, the authorities say the shooting appears to have been the work of right-wing extremists. It occurred on the 53rd anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution. U.S. space experts say the Soviet Union apparently has resumed tests of a killer satellite which could destroy orbiting enemy weapons or reconnaissance satellites. The tests were detected by experts in Washington during an 11-day Soviet experiment from October 20th to October 31st involving the Soviet Cosmos satellites 373, 374, and 375. During these experiments, Cosmos 373 acted as an intruding enemy satellite, The other two Cosmos were launched to intercept and inspect it with the capability of destroying it. Eddie Peabody, the old-time banjo player, is dead. He was 69. Peabody died this morning in Covington, Kentucky. He suffered a stroke last night and fell off the stage during a performance. The hour's top story, the governor of North Carolina has ordered National Guardsmen into the city of Henderson after a night of sniping and arson. Jeffrey Pond, NBC News, reporting. Now a check of WNBC weekend happenings. First, the weather forecast, partly sunny this afternoon with a high around 60. Fair and cooler tonight with a low in the upper 30s. Tomorrow, sunny and cool with a high near 50. Precipitation probability, 20% this afternoon, 10% tonight, and near zero tomorrow. The outlook for Monday, increasing cloudiness and continued cool. Right now, the winds are from the southwest at 8 miles an hour. The relative humidity, 55%. It's 59 degrees and it's sunny right now here in New York City. A Radio 66 check of the metropolitan area weekend activity shows the public is invited to Holy Trinity Episcopal Church, 315 Main Street at Franklin Avenue, West Orange, New Jersey, for a gay 90s fair today, and that will be going on until 8 p.m. this evening. Nathan Milstein will perform Bach, partitas, and sonatas for solo violin tonight in Grace Rainey Rogers Auditorium. For ticket information, call 736-2211. Free workshops in the arts are being offered by the Muse at the Bedford Lincoln Neighborhood Museum. Classes begin today and are offered at a first-come, first-served basis. Muse is located at Bedford Avenue and Lincoln Place in Brooklyn. A check of the golf waiting times now. Marsh Lou in the Bronx, no wait. Clearview Queen, 30 minutes. South Shore, Staten Island, an hour and a half. Maplemore, White Plains, 1 hour. Ashbrook, Scotch Plains, New Jersey, 15 minutes. Heatherwood, Center Reach, Long Island, 10 minutes. And Rockley, New Jersey, a 2 hour waiting time. A look at the traffic story on the Northern State Parkway. No problems. All Penn Central trains are on time. That holds true for the Long Island Railroad. The Garden State Parkway moving right along at about 60 miles an hour. The New York State Thruway, the Westchester Parkway, and the New Jersey Turnpike. All medium traffic at this hour. This is Hugh Morgan, WNBC News. The next check of WNBC weekend happenings will be heard at 12:30. Now back to NBC's Monitor.
Bicycles, there are bound to be a number who carry transistor radios. I've got one that clamps right onto the handlebars of my bike. At any rate, wherever you're hearing us, you're going to hear some fascinating and helpful talk about cycling from a guest shortly. I'm your host, Gene Rayburn, and here's Bobby Sherman with Sweet Touch of Life.
On Phoenix Lawn, there's the roses, and shades green are painted gold. Thank you.
Bobby Sherman on monitor.
Listen, when you buy antifreeze this winter, why settle for anything less than the protection plan that's ironclad? The Prestone Protection Plan. Prestone protects against freeze-ups, against corrosion, against most minor leaks. Or write Union Carbide within a year from installation for your money back. Prestone. You couldn't ask for more. Why settle for less?
You probably don't know is that very often while I'm talking to you on monitor, somewhere to the left and a couple of yards behind me here at Radio Central, there stands a bicycle. My bicycle. Now, that's how I travel to work. I love bicycling, and I've loved it for a good many years. And so I'm very happy to welcome to monitor a man who has written the definitive book on this noble means of transportation. It's called The Complete Book of Bicycling. Eugene Sloan, it's a real pleasure to meet you and have you with us here on monitor.
Thank you.
Now, just so our audience doesn't think we're a couple of isolated cycle aficionados, how many others do you estimate are bicycling these days all over the country?
Oh, I think there are hundreds of thousands of people bicycling to work. Doctors, lawyers, engineers. I know in Chicago, I know a policeman who rides the work of the day, and he never loses his bike because he keeps it in the lockup.
But in your area, now you commute from Evanston to the Loop in Chicago?
Yes.
That's how many miles?
12.5 miles.
Yeah, you do it every day except in heavy rain.
Right? And blizzards.
And blizzards.
Right.
And how about in the real cold weather? It's kind of tough when it's 10 below, isn't it?
I have electrically heated socks, standard underwear, and I just pile on the clothes and go. So it's not tough.
What do you think the city can do, your city, my city, and others, to encourage bicycling?
I think myself that setting aside one street, one part of one street, or two streets up and down town would be fine, provided one could keep the taxi cabs from driving in and out to the curb to pick up or discharge passengers. I think short of a physical barrier, that type of thing is good, but I still doesn't solve the basic problem of an isolated lane just for cyclists.
I think you say in your book there are about 64 million people who ride bicycles in this country.
That's right. There are 64 million bicycles. I think now there must be much closer to 68 million bicycles because about half as many bicycles are produced as automobiles.
Mm-hmm.
There's about one bike for every 200 people in this country.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do these people ride other than back and forth from work?
Well, you see your families riding around at night. You see a young family with a small child on the back of the bike. You see teenagers riding on bikes. You see people riding in parks. You see old people riding tricycles in southern cities, retirement cities and centers.
Mm-hmm.
You see everyone riding a bicycle. It's old enough to walk.
Mm-hmm. You ever been on the bicycle trails around America? They're getting some more of those now.
Well, this summer, my two sons and I went across the state of Wisconsin on the bike trail, and it is a beautiful trip.
You traversed the entire width of the state?
We did it in 3.5 days.
And how many miles was that?
350 miles.
We've got an 8-mile trail at the Cape Cod National Seashore up there that's beautiful. It goes through the dunes and the local scrub pine, and some of them are really quite scenic, aren't they?
Oh, they are beautiful. That's got to be one of the most beautiful spots in the country.
Now, you quote Paul Dudley White, the great heart specialist in your book. What is the essence of what he says? I know you're a big bike riding fan.
Basically, what he's saying is that 25% of the cardiac reserve are in the leg and thigh muscles. This simply means that when the muscles are in tone, they help push blood back to the heart and help the heart do its job. Good muscles, strong muscles, in tone, can be a virtual lifesaver and a preventer of cardiac accidents.
That's right, because the arteries in the legs, they pulsate, but the veins don't, and it depends on the muscle action to squeeze that blood from the veins back toward the heart.
Exactly.
All right, I'm going to keep on cycling. You'd never know I was 112 years old, would you?
Don't look a day over 100.
Watch it. I do the jokes around here. And I'll tell you what, just for that, you're going to have to sit in the corner for a while.
No, I'm just pulling your leg.
I'm pulling his leg.
We will take a bit of time out now for various other reasons and get back to the subject of cycling. Subdivision safety tips shortly. My guest at Radio Central, Eugene Sloan, author of The Complete Book of Bicycling. The mail will come to you from the Malibu Beacon.
Got a taste for something different, something really groovy? And get next to some Chateau Martin sparkling champagne. Chateau Martin's got the flavor that still can't kill. You can drink it as cold as you like, a little sweet, a little dry, and definitely together. Chateau Martin Champagne is made from specially selected choice grapes from the Finger Lakes District of New York State. You've got it made with Chateau Martin, the sparkling champagne made for your taste, the together taste. You'll never forget it. When it's time for a celebration, when it's time to swing, then it's time for Chateau Martin Cold Duck, nice and cold and bubbly. Chateau Martin Cold Duck has that tingling taste of sparkle, nothing like it. Lift your glass and get that smooth taste of a blend of New York State sparkling champagne and burgundy. The best taste, and the best price. You'll never forget it. Ask for Chateau Martin Cold Duck, product of Chateau Martin Wine Company, producers of Chateau Martin Strawberry Festival. At any rate,
that England's first topless restaurant closed for lack of business. The owner claimed it was because Englishmen were too shy to eat there.
Englishmen were too shy to eat there?
Well, there must be a different breed of Englishmen from those I know, especially those who frequent Soho. You know, they have nightclubs there that... Well, I guess we better not go into that. Meanwhile, back here on this side of the Atlantic, Alice's restaurant is still going strong. And the new Christy Minstrels explain why. To their carousing while we head for a spin through the autumn weekend.
the sky. For the fire is fire, like the picture of the fire. And as you set the foundation, we have built the nation.
Back to our guest head monitor, Eugene Sloan, author of the new complete book of bicycling. Eugene, a little earlier we talked about the types of people who cycle and the kinds of cycling they do. How about some of the mechanics or techniques of cycling now? For instance, why does one bike go faster than another?
Aside from the finite level of energy that each of us has, other things being equal, I think a bicycle is faster because it's made better. It has better bearings, larger bearings. It's maintained better. It's lighter.
Weight is an important factor.
Weight is almost everything in a bicycle.
And wind resistance, I guess, would be the other. That's why the handlebars are...
Well, that's one reason. The other reason is it helps you curve your spine, stretch your spine. It's good for the back, and it prevents the spinal column being compressed. Where if you're sitting straight up, you're getting road shock.
Aha!
The spinal discs are compressed. Whereas if you're bending over, your spine stretches as much as 2 inches. Much better for you.
Never knew that, and I've been riding a bike for a long time. Now, let's talk about some safety tips on bicycling.
Well, I think the most important safety tip I can give anyone is never to ride against the traffic. Always ride with the traffic. That way your speed is not added to, but it is subtracted from the speed of a car. If the car is going 20 miles an hour and you're going 10, then your relative speed is only 10 miles an hour instead of 30. That's one must. Second thing, you should never ride on the street unless there are parked cars actually on the street. This means that with the line of traffic in the road and with the parked cars, there has to be at least 2 feet between the parked cars and the cars moving in the street so that someone can open a car door.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you need as a cyclist. But you must ride straight. You must learn how to ride right down the middle of a yellow line in the street.
Those are general ones, aren't they, that anyone should follow. How about a man, let's say, who's never done much in the way of exercise, and he's 57 years old, and he says,
Michael, what do you say we get a couple bikes and go in the park? What have you got for him?
I think I got for him a word of caution. I don't think he should go more than 2 or 3 miles and rather slowly to start with. And I think he should build up over a period of time by adding 2 or 3 miles a day. He should start out by doing 2 or 3 miles. The next day, you do an extra mile and so forth till he can do 10 miles without really feeling terribly tired.
Mm-hmm.
There's an old-timers organization in England where you can't get into it unless you're 65.
Yeah.
But you have to be able to do 100 miles in under 5 hours, and most of the fellows can do that even up until their 80s. So
hold everything. Age 65, 100 miles in under 5 hours. That's 20 miles an hour.
That's right. And nobody's ever had a heart attack in those things doing that. And yet every day we hear people dying and keeling over from jogging. I think jogging's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Another major safety tip would be never to ride at night without a light. Not so you can see where you're going, but so that the cars can see you. You must have a good backlight. You must have a good front light. And there should be a law of that effect.
Mm-hmm. And what kind do you use? Do you kind of use the kind that you hold in your hand?
I use a French light, which I strap on my leg, which has a red light to the back and a white one to the front, and the leg movement makes the light very visible.
Uh-huh.
And I have one in each leg so that cars can see me in all directions.
Yeah. You must be quite a sight going down the street.
Really phosphorescent.
Hey, there goes Gene Sloan with his lighted ankles. Look at those ankles.
Also, I wear day-glow clothing.
That's a marvelous idea.
Oh, it's ugly, but it's there.
Day-glow is that orange paint that reflects light.
Yeah.
It seems to glow, doesn't it?
Right. And then if they run into you, you know it's out of sheer malice. Another safety tip I would strongly urge parents of young children to watch out for is always ride a small child in a carrier on the back of the bike rather than on the handlebars or handlebar carrier, because With a child on the handlebars, you cannot steer safely. The bicycle is always unbalanced. Whereas if the child is in the back, the weight is right behind the saddle, the bicycle is much better balanced and you can steer much more safely. Besides that, if you should run into something, the kid is always going to get hit first. So,
tip. Yeah. Now, there must be many monitor listeners right now whose interest in bicycling is stimulated because of the things you said. If they want to go out and buy a bike, what can you tell them about buying bicycles?
Gene, I've done a whole bit. I started out with the cheap discount house, $35 bargain special. Thought, gee, I had a great bargain. And everyone tells me that's what they do. I graduated to the 3-speed English Monster. I graduated to the cheap 10-speed. And finally, I got the only bike I should have had to start with, and that's the best one that I can buy. For the average person around town, I think a good $100 10-speed gear-shifted bike is just about right. And then if you want to graduate from that, you can give that to your child and go from there.
Mm-hmm. That's good advice. Now, before we go, let me say the title of your book one more time, The Complete Book of Bicycling. First book you've ever written on biking?
All right.
Well, thanks very much. It's been a real great pleasure to meet Eugene Sloan.
Chevrolet, Pontiac, Oldsmobile, Buick, Cadillac, and GMC truck dealers are open for business. In fact, most dealers have a selection of new 71s in their showrooms for you to look at, test drive, and order. Now is the time to see the cars with a GM mark of excellence. If your GM dealer doesn't have exactly the one you want, it's worth waiting for.
Stables in the string thing, as Monitor does its radio thing, and is keeping you entertained and informed every weekend on NBC, coast to coast in Oklahoma. We're with you on KVOO Tulsa, serving the great Southwest. Gene Urban here at your service again shortly.
Chrysler Plymouth dealer.
What is segregation?
I don't know what segregation is.
What is bigotry?
I don't know what bigotry is.
What does hatred mean?
I don't know. I don't know.
What is prejudice?
I think it's when she makes it.
That's beautiful.
We're looking for sunshine.
Happy Day Radio 66, WNBC, New York.
This is New Morgan, WNBC News. It's 12:30, 59 degrees, and sunny in New York City. A tragedy in the Bronx last night. Police are holding 17-year-old Larry Mullen on charges that he stabbed his mother and father to death. WNBC's Morrison Cruz talked with Patrolman James Oxley of the Bronx Police Precinct.
He opened the door and found Mrs. Mullen.
Police have not been able to determine a motive for the killings. A one-day wildcat strike has ended at Wilkwick School for Boys, a private residential treatment center at Yorktown in Westchester County. Nurses' aides, clerical employees, and caseworkers returned to their jobs today. Members of the community and social agency workers went on strike yesterday while negotiations were underway on the union's first contract at the school. About 130 members of New York Local 1707 are employed there. The school's executive director said the issue was a closed shop sought by the union and opposed by the school. There was a 23-minute electric power failure this morning in Rockland County, New Jersey, New York rather. It involved a large portion of the city. The huge Nanuet Shopping Center was among the facilities hit by the blackout, which began at 8:47. A dissident faction of the Liberal Party has called for the resignation of the party's top officers. New York City Council Minority Leader Alden Klingon, speaking today for what was called the Liberal Party for New Politics, criticized the leadership for failing to swing its support from Republican Senator Charles Goodell to Democratic Representative Richard Ottinger, who ran second to conservative candidate James Buckley. U.S. space experts say the Soviet Union apparently has resumed tests of a killer satellite capable of destroying orbiting enemy weapons or reconnaissance satellites. The tests were detected by experts in Washington in the last 2 weeks. It's the 53rd anniversary of the Bolshevik rise to power in 1917, Russia's biggest national holiday. But modern-day Soviet-American tension led the American ambassador to boycott both a Red Square military parade and a Kremlin reception. Tonight, the New York Rangers will play the Kings in Los Angeles. Broadcast time is 10:55 right here on WNBC Radio 66. Now a check of WNBC Weekend Happenings. First, the weather forecast, partly sunny this afternoon, with highs around 60. Fair and cooler tonight, with a low in the upper 30s. Sunny and cool tomorrow, with the highs near 50. Precipitation probability, 20% this afternoon, 10% tonight, and near zero tomorrow. And the outlook for Monday, increasing cloudiness and continued cool. Right now, the winds are from the southwest at 8 miles an hour. The relative humidity, 55%. It's 59 degrees, and it's sunny right now in New York City. A Radio 66 check of metropolitan area weekend activity shows St. Mary's Players Guild will present Why Not Join the Giraffe? A comedy in 3X, tonight at 8:30 p.m. in St. Mary's School Auditorium, 225th Street, and Carpenter Avenue in the Bronx. The annual handicap show and bazaar will be held at Mount Carmel Home for the Aged, 539 West 54th Street, here in the city today and tomorrow, and that's from 1 until 7 p.m. The Good Counsel Holiday Festival will be held on the campus of Good Counsel College and Academy, White Plains, New York, from 3 until 10. Looking at the golf waiting times, Saxon Woods, no wait. Mohansic, Yorktown Heights, no waiting time at this hour. And the traffic story for New York City, all roads leading into the city at this time are reported as being moderate. Again, the top story, in the Bronx, police are holding a 17-year-old youth for stabbing to death his mother and father. This is Hugh Morgan, WNBC News. Now back to NBC's Monitor.
Hugh Morgan here, too, and in a few minutes, my charming colleague, the celebrated syndicated columnist Cindy Adams, will take us behind the scenes of the celebrity scene to meet singer Bobby Gentry. Find out what makes her tick. She does tick, you know.
That is, if you get close enough, you can hear it.
No, I'm not kidding. I am kidding. How do I know what I'm talking about?
Right now, close to you, Andy Williams, he ticks too.
Else in the country knows what's best for every car, and you'll find it at your local Texaco retailer. If it's quality products for your car, last weekend on Monitor, Cindy Adams reviewed Bobby Gentry's act at the Waldorf Astoria, in which, according to Cindy, Ms. Gentry's navel played a major role. Well, in the interest of fair play, we thought Miss Gentry's navel should get equal time. And since it and she are inseparable, Cindy plays hostess to both.
Well, Bobby Gentry, I must say that of all the times I've seen you, this is the first time I've ever seen you with your navel covered.
Well, hello, Cindy, how are you?
What about those Levi's that you wear on stage? You always have your midsection kind of hanging out. Is that deliberately done?
Well, in the opening number of my act, since I began, I always open the show in Levi's and a tie-up blouse. Those particular Levi's I bought for $2.98, and then I spent $80 having them totally particularly right.
What about when you send that ripped-up blouse to the cleaner?
Oh, yeah, I was telling you about it earlier. It's funny. The Levi's, of course, are very well-worn, and they're made to look very well-worn. And the blouse that goes along with it has some rips and tears in it, very studiously placed. And we've had such bad experience with cleaners that we now attach a note to the blouse that says, please do not repair the blouse when we send it out to the cleaners.
But Bobby, you look great in that outfit. Is it like a trademark or is it some reason? I mean, you usually wear it on television shows and things.
Yeah, I wear them for a long time. First of all, that was my standard outfit the whole time that I was growing up. And it's just, it says there's two things. It reminds the public where I came from, and occasionally reminds me where I came from, too.
Well, about where you come from, Chickasaw County, Mississippi, you are wearing a 10-carat solitaire that's the size of a soup bone. You're about as Chickasaw County-ish and backwoodsy as a Bergdorf Goodman's charge account customer. How did you grow up so fast, honey?
Well, I was born in Mississippi, as you say, on a farm. I left there when I was 13 years old and moved out to California. And I've been out there since. And I was educated for the most part on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
I go back home every 2 or 3 months. And my grandparents still live on the same farm where I was born. But I've been away for some while now.
Did you really learn to play music and to sing music and to talk it and whatever you do from church? Did you really?
That was my first real exposure to music. I was the only child there on the farm. My only companions were numbered by piano. This, of course, sounds like a press agent's dream. It's nonetheless true. My grandmother traded a cow for a piano. And so I had a piano and an old battery radio, and I used to toddle back and forth from the radio to the piano and try to pick out the new tunes that I heard on the radio. I used to listen to WWL out of New Orleans, and this is broadcast from the fabulous Maryland Roosevelt Hotel. I played there last year, and I really did reminisce on opening night, thinking about all the times I used to listen to it when I was a little girl, and I was actually appearing. But anyway, I did that and listened to New Orleans. I heard jazz and music from the Blue Room. I could also get to Nashville, Tennessee on the radio, and I could hear the Negro blues and also country and western music from Nashville. My first actual practical experience with music was certainly in the church.
You said before that you go back every once in a while to your hometown and your roots. What happened one time, if I remember rightly, there was a very big welcome home to the gal who made it from Chickasaw.
Oh, yeah.
Did they carry on, or was it Chickasaw County Day? And
oh, it was quite a big thing. Actually, Chickasaw County put on a huge homecoming for me shortly after Ode to Billy Joe came out in 67. It took place in Houston, Mississippi, which is the county seat of Chickasaw County.
Oh, that's the big town. We all know Houston, Mississippi.
I recognized by a population of 3,500. At any rate, 15,000 people did show up, so people from all the neighboring counties came. It's a typical southern town. You have the court square. The courthouse is in the center of the town, and all the merchants build their shops around the city square. And each one of the merchants had taken a song that I had written off of my first album and illustrated their store window with the song. There was one called Papa, Won't You Let Me Go to Town with You, and another one called Lazy Willie. And the high school band had been rehearsing for weeks and weeks to be able to play some of the tunes on the album. Oh, it was quite lovely. And of course, they have only one police car in town, and they've only had that for 3 years. And
I think it was her motorcycle.
This was the first time he ever used his siren, and I mean, he didn't turn it off from the time I got in the car to the time I got out.
Well, what do you know about that? Cindy Adams and Bobby Gentry, they sound like bosom buddies. Sound like bosom buddies. Can you say that on radio? Oh, yeah, I just said it. They'll continue their conversation later today on Monitor. Meanwhile, in our own version of a courthouse square, we've set up a display in honor of Bobby Gentry's visit. And it's Papa, Won't You Let Me Go to Town with You, one of the songs she just mentioned.
Papa, won't you let me go to town with you? Papa, I'm feeling so down and blue. You just gotta come around and talk to me. Papa, won't you let me go to town with you? Parts and chocolate, and I'll make you a quick pack. If you don't let me go, I'll pattern ain't made to make me a dress. I did this morning with me. I done everything that my son been saying.
WNBC, New York.
Aren't you glad you live in these modern times when health problems can be openly discussed? For example, one out of every three adults suffers some symptoms of hemorrhoids. Several outstanding doctors have reported an exclusive medication. Preparation H gives prompt temporary relief in many cases from the pain of hemorrhoidal tissues, and Preparation H actually helps shrink swelling of hemorrhoidal tissues caused by inflammation and infection. Remember, there's no other formula like doctor-tested Preparation H.
Oh,
out now. I don't care what you get. We've got to move along here. The Jones fella on monitor.
Yes, I drive a Chrysler Corporation car, and I'll tell you, when you appreciate torsionaire suspension is when you need positive control, which is all the time.
Take a car cross country. You hit all kinds of roads, curves, bumps, but you keep control.
You don't seem to be in trouble. Uncomfortable. Chrysler
Corporation. Extra care in engineering. Extra value. Extra worth. Torsion bars in front. Leaf springs in the rear. On a curb, your car leans less. Over a bump, your car will level itself. Respond quicker. Your car will track in a straight line with less sway. You'll notice this even more if you're driving a station wagon or pulling a trailer.
Car won't dip as much when you brake, squat as much when you accelerate.
Dodge, Plymouth, and Chrysler. Cares about you and your family. Cares about your comfort and your safety. Torsion air suspension on all 1971 Chrysler Corporation North American built cars.
Now, Monitor Sports, and a question for you. Do you believe the weekly college football polls? Well, Kurt Gowdy has some thoughts about that.
Who's number one? Well, if you take a look at the Associated Press poll, it would probably be Texas. The poll talks to writers and broadcasters around the country, many of them, by the way, who never get to see the teams involved. The other wire poll, the coaches pick the number one team. I don't know how busy these coaches can be during a season. I just wonder how much time they have to really analyze the nation's college football teams and give some deep thought to the rankings. Sometimes they even rate the teams before the season starts. For instance, this year, Ohio State was ranked number one and had not even played a game yet. Sometimes the ratings all get pretty silly. But I think the real way to really rank the number one team would be to have them meet on the field. For instance, Texas or Ohio State, number one. Well, you couldn't tell unless they actually played. It could be decided on the field. But there's some great games coming up. Ohio State and Michigan, both undefeated right now, will be meeting November 21st. Ohio State will be so fired up, they may break the locker room down trying to get out. They lost only one game in the last 3 years, and that was to Michigan at Ann Arbor. Texas plays Arkansas in December, and that could settle some high spots in the national rankings. Arkansas will want retaliation for their narrow loss to Texas last year. Notre Dame plays LSU on November 21st, then closes the season against USC. And the Fighting Irish just might win the national title. Mississippi has LSU as its last big test. Nebraska, undefeated, has its toughest game left a week from today with Kansas State. Stanford could have a rough time today with improving Washington University. On November 14th, a big date, Stanford plays the unbeaten Air Force of Colorado Springs. That may swing the upper drawer ratings, too. So it would appear that when you get to thinking about number one, college football has saved the best for last. This is Kurt Gowdy for Monitor Sports.
And we thank you, Kurt. Monitor Music now. We've only just begun by the Carpenters.
Just begun, so you made some promises. A kiss from the heart.
Satchel.
Hey, you're Randy Granatelli.
And you must be Dolly.
Right. Say, Mr. Granatelli, look, I use STP oil treatment in my car, just like you say. Tell me, is it really important to use STP in winter as well as summer?
It sure is.
Yes, indeed. In the winter, STP oil treatment acts like auto grease for your oil. Helps your engine start easier and faster in cold weather.
No, that makes sense. So in cold weather as well as hot, STP helps you run smoother, quieter, longer, just like you and the missus always say on the radio.
Right. But hey, this hot dog has onion and mustard. I want a ketchup.
Mr. Granatelli, you tell me what to put in my car. I'll tell you what to put on your hot dog.